Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. And over the last few years, Jeopardy has really grown in popularity. You had Alex Trebek's passing, a number of super champions, all of the guest hosts, etc. And Jeopardy, which is syndicated, generally outperforms its station's primetime lineup. More people see Jeopardy every night than top 10 shows. And of course, they see Jeopardy 5 times a week. It really has become part of popular culture. So this week and next, I'm going to take you inside Jeopardy. Suzanne Stone was the head researcher and worked on the show for 38 years. When it first went into syndication, Alex Trebek, who was also a producer back then, handpicked her to join the team. So we will get into how it is put together, what goes on during the tapings, how the contestants are chosen, who those people are on the set, how the clues are chosen. Like I said, this is part one. Double Jeopardy is next week. But for now, I feel like I'm Johnny Gilbert here. For now, let's meet today's guest, Suzanne Stone, on Hollywood and Levine. Well, I'm going to get the obvious question out of the way first. Alex Trebek, what was he like, really?
He really was an educator in many ways, very professional as a broadcaster. He started early in Canada, and by the time I first met him in 83, he had very definite ideas about Jeopardy. He was the producer of Jeopardy for the first several seasons. And he set down the rules on writing and research, and he was very strong about wanting things double-checked, having a good research library. This is in the olden days before the internet. We had Merv Griffin had a library packed up from his original Jeopardy New York offices, which we started augmenting and unpacking in 1984 in our offices in Hollywood. And we built it to a 7,000 plus volume research library. And then the internet came, and we had to start changing our rules a little bit to allow high standards. But Alex was very to literally his dying day as the host. He was very concerned about things being accurate, up to date, and fair to all the contestants.
And you talked about his last days. I mean, it was very difficult for him that final year when he was undergoing chemo. And usually if somebody has chemo, they're like knocked out for 2-3 days. And he'll have a chemo treatment on Monday and Tuesday have to tape 5 shows. He was really a trooper, but you were telling me before that that's not the first time that he has had to persevere through tapings, because he's had a number of medical and physical challenges to overcome.
Early on, he had a bad back and a bad knee that he got from playing ice hockey with his fellow Canadian expatriates in Hollywood and, you know, things like that. And then it turned out we both he and I had both knee problems, and I got knee replacements in 2010, and he was fascinated by knowing what it was all about. And he wanted to check my scars, and he said, "Oh, my doctor says I need a knee replacement, but I'm, you know," he was a tough guy, physically tough. And he, it took him about 5 or 6 years before he finally did have a knee replacement. And he persevered through that too. And I knew what kind of pain he was going through and the physical therapy he had to go through, but he did it. And once he walked out on that stage, you had no idea that he had a limp or that he had some pain, and he did his job. I mean, he really was amazing that way.
So let's talk about you. As a researcher, what exactly did you do? Would the writers come to you and ask questions, or would you come across things and go, "Oh, this might be an interesting topic," and approach them? How did that work?
A little bit of everything. We have head writers, and then they go ahead and work with the writers on creating categories, sometimes also finals, and maybe just one clue will become a whole category later on. And so once the head writers approve of the categories, they're meted out to the researchers, and sometimes given deadlines, sometimes quotas. And, you know, maybe you can do 2 or 3 categories a day, depending on the difficulty of the topic. And also, we have had a very, and we hope to have an open conversation about interesting topics, current events, funny things that we discover, and build categories around them, or an unusual Final Jeopardy, things like that. So it's a little bit of everything. We always had obviously our research library, which is like a bullpen area with a conference room table. And then there was individual offices around. So everyone mingled in the olden days. That's coming back now with post-pandemic. But, you know, it's a conversation with very intelligent, creative people all day long. So that was fun. And, you know, trying to keep up on what's going on in the world and in culture and in humor and pop culture, things like that. Plus always wordplay, music, pop music. And, you know, we just did that all these years.
How much of that did you retain over the years? Okay. If you were to change your name, you know, to Nicole Kidman and go on as a Jeopardy contestant, you know, wearing a different wig, would you kick ass and be one of those super champions because you have over the years retained all this arcane knowledge of all the different things you've had to research?
I would say yes. I have a memory that has always been good. It's always helped me out in real world. I didn't do drugs growing up, and that I think helped a lot. But I'd have to work on my buzzer skills. And but yes, I do watch the show to this day, and I play along now that I'm retired and I can watch the show without knowing what the categories are or anything like that. But yeah, I think my skills were well used in the show. And yes, my memory is very good to this day.
Now, do staffers like you or the writers ever get a chance to play practice games to get a sense of what it is like to be a contestant?
Not really. As it is, years ago, the producers were very interested in talking to some of the champion contestants and seeing if they were interested in becoming Jeopardy staffers. And so that happened. And to this day, we have several people on the staff who did have experience as contestants. And one researcher, Matt Caruso, was I believe a 3-day champ and graduate of UCLA.
Yay.
And
no wonder he's smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he, to this day, is a researcher, and he has written questions for the show too, and very interested in a lot of different topics. Obviously, good enough to be a contestant. And, you know, That's good to know.
Now, are there specific writers for certain topics? I mean, is there a writer who is very good on history, or one that's very good on Shakespeare, or one that's very good on popular culture? And so all of the geography questions go to him, and all of the, you know, what Cher doing these days questions, you know, go to a different writer?
It sometimes works out that way. There are several writers who are, first, everyone's got a college degree. Some have masters in English, history, political science. I have an art degree, so tell me.
Hey, there are art questions. There's
a lot of art questions. And I sometimes would have contributed ideas for, you know, artists or interesting things about art history. But yeah, there are writers who kind of specialize in things, Shakespeare or, you know, novels, especially when it comes to celebrity Jeopardy shows. And there'll be some of those coming up in the coming months. You're always going to have that celebrity angle. So you have to keep up on your People magazine, your Page Six, your gossip columns, TMZ or whatever, to see what the names are out there. But Cher is eternal. She's a goddess. So we can always do a Cher clue.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here.
Okay.
For those Celebrity Jeopardy tournaments, do you dumb down the questions a little bit so that the celebrities don't seem like idiots?
It's a little bit of both. A lot of the contestants who are celebrities are well-educated and keep up, and they could probably do very well in the regular games. But because the shows that are celebrities, they're playing for charities, their favorite charities. We want everyone to look good. And also we want, you know, the audience to be fascinated by what responses they have. So there's a mix in the material. You'll have nuclear physics and things like that, as Jason Alexander picked. And you're going to have, you know, Oscar fashions and things like that, or, you know, classic TV. And that's a good thing, I think, a good balance for the celebrities.
Who is it, Wolf Blitzer? Yeah, who is it, Wolf Blitzer, who was just terrible on the show?
He did not do well at all, which I think to this day still people ask about. And I don't know if he was, you know, exhausted from the flight from back east or whatever. Usually the celebrity shows were taped on weekends when they'd be, people would be free from their, you know, especially if they're on a current television show or whatever.
Right.
So I don't know. But yeah, Wolf Blitzer's name comes up.
Well, Anderson Cooper did very well. And he's a very nice man. CNN is kind of, 50-50 on that.
I guess so.
Going back to the writers, so how much material do they need to turn in a day? I mean, are they expected to turn in 2 categories a day, or 10 categories a day, or 50 questions, or 100 questions? It's like, what is expected of each writer?
Okay, when you watch the show, you have 5 clues in each category. But when it's in the writing process, the writers have to submit 7 clues, if not more, to the categories that they submit to the head writer. That way, the head writers can go over and discuss what needs to be positioned in the right place. And there's always extras written, researched, and programmed in the computers in case there's a technical problem or a judgment problem. We don't have to scramble around. So that way, the writers have to produce, say, 7 or 8 clues per category. Maybe, I don't know what the current quota or expectation is. It could be 3 categories a day. And once a week, they would go over their material with the head writers. And there's always extras. There's always, you know, people have their cache of perennials or evergreen categories, evergreen clues, finals that maybe were not looked upon as lovingly as they could have been or rewritten, and they get in and do very well. So there's always a mysterious way of, filling out a game.
So do the writers just sit in their office and go, here would be a good category, Vice President Wives, and then they come up with a bunch of stuff?
Sure.
Or do they work out with the head writers first so, you know, they pitch topics, and the head writer says, yeah, cartoonists of the 20th century do that. Women who wore green, no. Rivers of Nevada, no. That kind of thing. So that, right. that they sort of have their marching orders when they go off and write questions.
It's both. There's enough leeway to have a writer create their own categories, their own ideas, which they submit, discuss with others, discuss with the head writers. And then there's always going to be what we call the meat and potato categories, the history, geography, music, vice presidential wives. I'd love to know more about some of those ladies. And maybe, the head writers do too. And U.S. presidents, certain politicians, of course, make it into Jeopardy games. And so the writers have some leeway, and they're certainly encouraged to come up with ideas. One of our original writers, Stephen Dorfman, who sadly passed away in 2004, he always came up with interesting ideas. He had called up a Disneyland gift shop one day. He had a gift he was trying to find, I think a Disney-themed gift, and they mistook him for the Exterminator. And they told him, and this is a true story, they told him there were mice in the, they were trying to get rid of mice in the Disneyland gift shop. And he was thrilled with this idea of doing a vermin category and building the whole, and this is like in 1984, 85, building a whole category around vermin, not just the one clue about Disneyland, but other things about things that obviously we don't like to have in our houses.
Snakes on a plane.
Yeah, snakes on a plane. So you never know when, inspiration will strike. And depending on the head writers and also Alex, sometimes we'd run through things with Alex. What would you do with this? What would you do with that? And he'd say yes, or he'd also suggest ideas for clues too. And it was give and take, and it was always a stimulating environment.
So you talk about the actual board and different categories, and I guess there are sort of specific genres so that over the course of one game, two of the categories might be history and geography. There'll be one kind of pop culture television. There'll be one of those before and after. I hate those before and after categories, but I imagine that it's for people who don't necessarily retain a lot of trivia, but are very fast on their feet and are very quick thinkers and are able to put those things together. That's in a way a very different skill.
Yes, the wordplay in the original back in the 80s, and it still continues today now that things are printed out through a computer printer, but we'd have color-coded the various categories. So history, U.S. presidents, that's like a blue, the academics. Mm-hmm. And wordplay would be yellow, so that's, something that's always usually at the end of a board of the six categories, something quotations, something on wordplay, before and after, or begins with S, things like that. So there's the greens, which would be more lifestyle, and then orange for people's names, things like that. So you're going to have a spectrum of topics. And that we thought, and I think it's played out, that it's fair. It gives variety to the home audience as well as the contestants. And we know from interviewing the contestants, the champs, after they win, they'll talk about what categories they had no idea how their strengths would be in certain categories until they had to play them. And they were forced, it's the last category on the board where people had to go. So we over the years figured out that it's better to be fair and have variety.
Now, is there research that says, people at home like to see more pop culture, so do more blue categories and less orange categories? Or do you just ignore all of that and say, we just want a balanced game and the clues are what they are?
I really couldn't say because I think that's the domain of the market research people that report to the producers. And then if it gets filtered down to the head writers, you know, but I don't recall anything really like that. I think because Alex and his passing was a demarcation point, and with the pandemic and my retirement, I don't have the current situation as well as I remember from working there. But there's always going to be people say, oh, you're not fair to the contestants, or the home audience would never get that. And especially now with social media, we're getting immediate feedback from people who love to Twitter, who love to go on the various fan sites, things like that. And they do pay attention to what's being fed back to them from the audience. But as far as how they're reacting to it, I can't say.
Now, I imagine as the show is airing that you guys are sitting there keeping track of which things stumped them, which
yes.
ones they got, which ones all three tried to ring in on, which nobody rang in on. And I'm sure that must help inform you in the future as to the difficulty of certain questions, difficulty of certain topics. I'm sure that, again, there's a lot of autopsy work done.
Yeah, when the show is being taped, that was part of my job, is we're watching on a monitor in our office while, you know, several hundred feet away is, you know, the stage and the studio. But we watch the feed, and then we'd have the script of the actual game, and we keep score on what's happening, who answers what, you know, the three contestants. And then all that's put into our database, and then that can be analyzed by the producers and the head writers at a later date. But yeah, over the years, you find out certain things are obsolete. In 1984, if you mentioned the term Westinghouse, people would know that was, you know, was an inventor of air brakes. And then the name became a brand to a lot of appliances and mm-hmm. things like that. But today you wouldn't, you know what that really means unless you're an old timer. And so over the years, certain things evolve and change. And as far as, you know, how the public reacts to them, you know, I think we're always going to be aware of if there's something people stand and stare, and the contestants and perhaps the people at home. And then they now can tweet back to us or, you know, write. We still get letters. I know that people still write letters. They will phone you. That was part of my job, is around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which is 7 o'clock Eastern time, depending on the city. I'd get phone calls from people, sometimes in bars, who are watching, you know, up on the bar, Jeopardy. And in fact, my local bowling alley, their bar always has Jeopardy on at 7 o'clock here in Los Angeles. And we'd get calls from people saying, what was that final about? I didn't understand it. Or, you know, that's crazy what you asked. Things like that. We, you know, pass on the information to the producers about what the public wants or what they consider, you know, unfair or unusual. And or sometimes they're just a little drunk and a little tired, and they just wanted to know what Alex said about certain things.
What was the name of that constellation?
That's right.
Me yes. and the guys here have a bet.
That's right.
What was the name
Arbit.
Of that constellation? Yeah. What was that river in Pittsburgh again?
Yes. Well, I think there's three rivers.
Three,
right?
There are three rivers. We got okay. to not get the Monongahela. What was that one? Those guys trying to pronounce Monongahela. Anyway, do writers, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit with this question too. Do they keep track of each writer's questions answered, questions not answered, questions where no one tuned in, and you know, do they go up to the writer and they go, you got to be a little tougher with these questions, or three people in America would know the answer to this one?
I honestly can't say, because I'm not, since I don't currently interact with the head writers or the writers on their business, And, you know, that is part of the game show tradition here in America, is that things are kept very on the down low. We have to sign every year forms on what we do and what we can say to the public. But I don't know, because I'm not a writer. I never was a real writer on the show. I did early on write material. But I'm sure that conversation could be going on, especially now with the new executive producers and new producers and things like that. We'll see what happens in the new season. And, you know, I have no idea who will be the new host or whatever. That's been part of the speculation for the last year. But there's always going to be discussion of in-house on, you know, only three people are going to know that answer. And I certainly have spoken up over the years about something that I thought was not going to be correctly answered. And, you know, maybe even have a side bet with somebody else on the staff, you know, and they're not going to answer that. Or they're
oh, yeah, I'm sure.
This.
There's a lot of that going on, I imagine. Well, the writers, a lot of your writers have also been there. 10 years, 20 years, 25 years. So
1990, our most senior writer started in March of 1990. And she was a newlywed, Debbie Griffin. And now she her daughter is a proud graduate of UCLA.
Yay.
And so that's an amazing accomplishment.
I thought you were going to say, and she was a newlywed, and now she's on her fourth husband.
But so, and as it is, yeah, I was the old timer there, but 1990 was a big year for getting new writers and researchers. And then after, you know, the last 7 years or so, there's been some new researchers, and we all worked together and got along. And the old timers like us, you know, we could tell stories. And you know, they couldn't believe some of the stories I told, I think, about how things were done with books. And, you know, to my last day in the office, you know, what book, where would I find this book? You know, somebody cited a, you know, this obscure whatever, where is it on this, you know, shelf? And encyclopedias. Now, of course, all of them are online subscription ones, such as Britannica and other things that are online. It makes it a lot easier to dig through and find newspaper articles or obscure biographies, things like that. So things have changed, obviously. And but yeah, the people that have been around since the 90s, that's 30 plus years now.
Stability for a writer? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You talked about the Final Jeopardy question a few times. Is it a different yardstick, whatever, to that goes into coming up with those Final Jeopardy questions? And they're so important because games, so many of the games hinge on Final Jeopardy. Is there a way that you test them first? Do you research them or something?
Yeah, they're tested and they're considered, you know, thinker questions where you're going to have the contestants thinking about this. They have to look at each piece of the clue to see where it's going to guide them. Mm-hmm. And hopefully at least one person's going to get it correct, you know, and it's going to be something that'll have to entertain and inform the viewers and be fair to the all three contestants, because you're right. Champions, you know, their material, their fate with the show can turn on a final and the way that they bet.
Yep.
And that's been an amazing thing to watch in the last couple of years, and seeing some of these people, which will be seen later on this year in the Tournament of Champions, and how they bet. And yeah, so it's got to be a special clue, something that's, you know, a little different, but it's what we call a thinker. It's just something that you can't immediately respond to. You have to really look at everything in the clue, the components of the clue, the date, the phrasing, if there's a quotation within the clue. You know, that's so important.
Yeah, I feel so good about myself when I can get a Final Jeopardy correct and they don't get it. And it's like, Amy.
But yeah, it's true that they are tested out. The writers and researchers will all gather, you know, a certain time will be announced, and everyone will read off their material, and you'll have to guess what the answer is, and it'll be discussed. And it's a, you get the preview of what, you know, there might be that final that ends up being the one that takes down a contestant, such as Ken Jennings when after 74 shows.
Right. Which, by the way, I got that question right.
About,
I remember the question was something like, what company does the most business in April or something like that? And I thought, okay, H&R Block because of taxes. Right. And he said FedEx.
I think he said FedEx. And that is something that here, who knew back in 2004 that Ken would be back?
Right.
And here he is. So here it is. But yeah, the UPS versus FedEx or the U.S. Post Office, but it was H&R Block.
Yeah. Yeah, I was so proud that I got that one. Of course, he gets everything else. there was that famous category about football that nobody knew the answers to. Are there other categories that you have since retired because like nobody got them?
No, I think it was the only that was the most famous that I recall. There's, like I said, like the word Westinghouse, that used to be a household word back in the 60s, 70s. And now if you did a whole category on George Westinghouse, American inventor, people would stare and what are you talking about? What does this have to do with our life? But no, I think there's just very, you know, we try obviously to offer the public and the contestants good material, fair material, entertaining material. And I don't recall. I think that football, it just happens that the three contestants were not well-versed in, as I wouldn't be, with sports. Although I really enjoyed working on Sports Jeopardy with Dan Patrick. I learned a lot, and it was, you know, so colorful and fun to, you know, learn more about not only athletes that I would know of, say, you know, Lou Gehrig or O.J. Simpson or somebody else like that. But it was fun to learn, you know, and you know, appreciate athletes, sports stars.
Well, I used to love when you had Rock and Roll Jeopardy.
Yeah.
My daughter Annie and I would watch it together as a team. And anything like 1950s through 1980, I got everyone.
Yeah.
And everything 80 on, Annie got. It's like,
that's a good team.
We would be Matamodio if we were a team on Rock and Roll Jeopardy.
Yeah, I worked on Rock and Roll. It was fun, too.
And there is part one of my two-part interview with Suzanne Stone. A lot more to talk about next week. Thanks, as always, to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, Howard Hoffman, Bruce and Jason Miller, and John Wolford. My email address, should you wish to get in touch, is HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. That's HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. I am on Twitter @KenLevine. I'm on Instagram, Hollywood and Levine, where I showcase some of my cartoons. Come back next week for Double Jeopardy, as they say. More with Suzanne Stone right here on
Hollywood and Levine.